Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We have merch. Check out the AmericanGlutton.net shop. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. A number of people have come up to me wearing American Glutton merch, and nothing fills my heart with more pride than seeing somebody in one of these t-shirts. And I've been stopped on the street and asked where to get it when somebody sees me in an American Glutton hoodie. Well, you can get it all at the shop on AmericanGlutton.net. And my favorite t-shirt, Yesterday It Was Tomorrow, Right Now, is up now. Get it while supplies last.
Hi, I'm Ethan Suplee. Welcome to American Glutton. Outside of acting, my two favorite things to do are diet and eat. I have a very complicated relationship with food, and on this podcast, we're going to talk about all of it. Food as entertainment, food as sport, food as fuel. I'll talk to experts and the average person, just like you and me.
I hate to ask you to do anything, but if you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to like, subscribe, rate, review, all of the above on whatever app you're getting it. Today on the show, I'm talking to Dr. Josh Axe about his new book, Think This, Not That, 12 Mind Shifts to Break Through Limiting Beliefs and Become Who You Were Born to Be. Please enjoy our conversation. Josh Axe, welcome back to the American Glutton Podcast.
Ethan, thanks for having me, man. Great to see you again.
Good to see you too. Thanks so much for coming back on. How are you?
Man, good. Yeah, life is really good. We just had our second daughter here about 3 months ago. So enjoying that, being a nice girl dad. And life is good and getting better. So
I too am a girl dad, and I love it. Do you have no boys?
No, I have a 4 year old and a 3 month old.
Yeah, I definitely wanted a boy. And then when I was around little boys, I was so thankful to have little girls. I mean, I'm sure I would have loved little boys too, you know, but like my experience with little girls was so great that like just the way they played, I enjoyed parenting them more, I think, than I would have boys.
You know, it's so interesting. A lot of my guy friends, they have a lot of daughters. In fact, I've got three friends that have five daughters. So Michael Hyatt, Isaac Meek, and Ryan Cole. And Michael Hyatt told me something. He's in his, I want to say he's in his 60s, and he has, again, five daughters. And he said, you know what's really great about girls is, he said, they tend to always come back, like for the holidays, once they're older, you see them more. He said, the boys, he said, I noticed with my other, they run off. So he said, you tend to sometimes see your girls more later on in life, which is a nice plus.
Totally. And that's true. It's wonderful. Okay, we spoke a few years ago, and we spoke, I think, generally on weight loss, but also the state of health in America and all of these questions. Do you think we've improved? Because I have a lot of feelings on this subject, sir.
Well, no, I actually think, see, I think we probably talked in 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's almost 5 years ago.
Yeah. So probably not. Yeah, no, definitely worse. Right. I mean, it's worse.
Yeah, I mean, we're failing. Our lifespan has gone down since then.
Yeah, you know, obviously the pandemic and the way those lockdowns worked, I think, you know, and here's the thing that's gotten worse than anything has been mental health issues, because if you're just solely looking at which conditions have risen the most over the past 10 years, it's going to be mental health issues. Nothing else is even as close to that. I mean, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and none of those pale in comparison. Now, other things are growing as well, but that's definitely increased. So yeah, I definitely say we've somehow gone backwards.
I have, look, I'm not trained in any of this, but I have theories. And for me, the mental health stuff appears to me, and I don't want to diminish any of it. Obviously, there are people who have real and severe mental health issues, but the way it's rising in like these catastrophic rates, as you're describing, I just go like, if you're in a village where you got to hike 3 miles to get water, you got to actually use your body to repair your structure for shelter. Yep. You got to go out and plant vegetables or harvest meat somehow, and you're actually working. I don't think there's as much mental health issues under those circumstances. Yep. So for me, I look around and I go, we're sitting more, we're looking at screens, we're not doing as much, and of course we're going a little bit nuts.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a combination of things, and I think you hit on a big part of it. And I think there's another part as well, though. So there's I read a lot of these psychology medical journals. And one of the things that you'll notice when you read these psychology studies is that one of the biggest things that causes anxiety, depression, and mental health issues is when you're focused on yourself, your condition, your disease, how bad you have it, but thinking about yourself a lot. And that's really what's happened in our modern society today. It's become the entire world needs to cater to me and my identity and my diet and my everything, versus traditional identities were more, it's not about me, it's about my community and how can I serve my community, sacrifice myself for my nation or my family or my community. So actually a big part of the mental health issue is due to this constantly self-focus that has been created through just culture today. And I think the other half you just hit on, I think that we are on screens all of the time. And really, I mean, the studies show, I saw a study recently that said, one was on people with ADHD, 80% of them are vitamin D deficient, but the majority of the population. So in vitamin D and just being outside in general is crucial to mental health. It's crucial to the health of other things, your bones, your immune system. But I do think the lack of just time spent outdoors is crippling and crushing to a lot of people's health, including their mental health.
Yeah. And it does seem weird, but now, you know, I totally agree with you. Like I go outside every day. I live in different places, but in one of the places that I spend the most time, there isn't quite as much, like I don't have to leave my house. I don't have to, but I find myself going like, no, it's morning. I got to go outside. It's almost like taking a vitamin, you know, like I got to go. And you see this in social media too, where you have guys who are prescribing sunlight, go get a certain amount of time in the morning before you're putting blue light in your eyes, get the red light from the sun in your eyes. And it's just like, you know, it's kind of the same thing with fiber and vegetables for me. Like left on my own, I don't want to eat a lot of vegetables. Yeah. I don't like them. I don't want to eat fiber. Fiber's boring, you know? Chia seeds get stuck in my teeth and they're a pain in the butt. But like, if I don't do them, I find a very slow creep towards a negative outcome.
Well, I think, again, some of this is societal in terms of the mindset that we have promoted. One of the things I respect so much about you, I mean, when I read your story about weight loss and how much you lost, I mean, in order to do that, You've got to get out of your comfort zone. What people of today is they've really embraced being comfortable, right? It's easy to just sit and scroll on your phone. It's easier to sit indoors than go outdoors. It's easier to eat packaged food and throw it in the microwave than make something fresh at home. All of that's easier. But if you want to live your best life possible, it's like we've got to really be intentional about doing things and getting out of our comfort zone and doing the hard things. It's like, you know, hard things equal a great life if you are choosing your discomfort, right? It's because if not, you're going to have a different type of discomfort and regret later on in life, of course. But I think that that mentality of, I want to get better, I want to live the best life possible, and so therefore, I'm going to get outside in the morning, I'm going to eat cleaner food, I'm going to do these things. And it's true, you know, people can take a vitamin D supplement, and I think that's good, but nothing can replace the actual sunshine. It's still not even close to as good. Again, now listen, if you live in Canada or anywhere above really the upper half of the US, you should probably be on a vitamin D supplement most of the year. Unless you're getting sunshine that day, you probably want to take a vitamin D supplement, but all of us should be trying to get outside every single day. Again, I just did a podcast on ADHD, and my number one prescription for kids with ADHD is spending more time outdoors.
Right.
It's the most important, one, because boys are wired that way. They need to get their energy out, but also what it does to the circadian rhythms and actually balancing out melatonin so they can sleep better, and cortisol, which allows them to focus better when you balance out those stress hormones. But yeah, I mean, vitamin, you know, being in the sun and just outdoors, generally speaking, is probably one of the top three things somebody could do for their health, period.
Yeah. I just think the way that the vitamin D is occurring in our body, there's a system happening that creates that vitamin B versus,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure we could get some through nutrition, but that isn't the primary way for however long we've been around on planet Earth that our bodies were developing vitamin D through sunlight. And so bypassing it cannot be the best way to get it. But I agree with you. Like, yeah, if you're in Canada or London, those people can spend a lot of the year with no sunlight and go outside all the time and just stay like pale vampires. So take vitamin D.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Yeah. And so what happens when the sun hits our skin, it's our liver actually that starts producing vitamin D. And so, and really the only other food that really has significant levels, and it's still not even that significant. I mean, mushrooms are the highest.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, mushrooms are definitely the highest. And then fermented raw dairy is probably the second, but it's still not much at all. And then actually fish has some if you do sardines, but that's only from eating the bones.
Right.
So that's where you'd actually get it from. But for the most part, mushrooms have some, but really there's almost no foods that even have really any vitamin D of significance. So really our only place, like if we didn't have vitamins, like throughout history for the last whatever, 6,000, 10,000, however many years, you know, the only way to get it was the sun.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or if you happen to live in a place where you're catching a lot of sardines, which is very few places.
Yes.
I'm sure the Mediterranean people were getting a double whammy. They got lots of sun and sardines, you know?
Yes.
Do you think there's I think sometimes that like people require problems, you know, like, and as our problems for literal survival diminish, we create these ancillary problems just because like, even like really, really wealthy people that I know who I go like, well, that guy can't have any problem. Not true. They all have problems, lots of problems. And some of them I think are invented, are problems that the, you know, and it would be hard to walk yourself through it because you go like, well, I don't like this problem. I want to get rid of it. Not so easy. You've created it for yourself and now you're living within this situation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. In fact, there's a great book on this. I'm trying to remember the one I had read on it, but they really went through this and they said the same thing happened with the fall of Rome. I mean, by the way, it's actually fairly scary if you look at the way that the United States mirrors Rome. I mean, the United States is the greatest superpower of a country since the Roman Empire, and how certain things started happening and creeping in, everything from that, you know, it's sort of this pattern of they went from these bold warriors, you know, taking over to getting more comfortable, you know, being political, setting up, you know, having the problems of building out their cities and integrating the new people, to then, once that was set, it was other problems, right? We're going to start focusing on identities around, I'm not getting political, I'm just saying this is what happened. Identities around, you know, different genders or this or that. I mean, lots of, but those all happen. Like the same patterns you'll see in the U.S. you saw in the Roman Empire. And eventually it created a fall because basically so many people had stopped accepting responsibility. It's this thing. It's really what you mentioned earlier. Everyone got so addicted to comfort. Everyone was so addicted to just living as comfortable as possible. That's not the state of a warrior. That's not the state of somebody that's strong, whether it's strong mentally or strong physically. You know, we want these, you know, warrior poets or warrior philosophers. Like we should all be aiming to grow stronger physically and stronger mentally. Well, if you're spending time scrolling on social media, you're growing weaker mentally. Now, if you're watching something educational on YouTube or a podcast, that's different. That's growing. But if you're just scrolling on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or whatever, you're weakening your mentality because what you could be doing something else. You could be growing spiritually, reading the Bible. You could be reading the Stoics like Marcus Aurelius or the ancient philosophers like Aristotle and Socrates. Like you could be growing mentally or growing physically. Well, today people are getting weaker mentally and physically. And it's only a matter of time when an entire society weakens themselves to a certain degree to where there's a fall. And that's the reality.
No, I know. I'm a big fan of history. And if you look at something like Will Durant's The Story of Civilization, which is a massive, massive, I think it's 11 volumes on civilization. There's always this pattern. This pattern has always been there. And so when I look around and recognize that pattern, which you can go and see over and over and over again throughout history, there's part of me that just goes like, okay, well, I'm going to be individualistic and do what I can and talk to like-minded people and say like, this is what I'm interested in. Cause I'm not really interested in playing that game of like, let's make society conform to us. And like, that's just not my deal at all. But there is part of me that goes, it's inevitable. This is happening. The worrisome part is that with the internet, it all seems to happen so much faster. So you can go back to Rome and watch it happen over 150 years.
That's true.
And we are now possibly watching it happen in one generation, which is like, whoa, the inevitability of it is a factor. America probably will not be the great superpower forever. No superpower has been the superpower forever. That's fine. I have no thing of like, we have to be dominant forever. I don't. It's just like this is a natural cycle. Somebody else will take over and we'll get to live under their rule and see what they're, but God, it can happen so fast with the internet, with this kind of social contagion of ideas and like, and the ideas you're talking about reading Marcus Aurelius, it just doesn't kind of, it requires somebody to put a lot of effort into it, right? Where the other one is something you kind of catch. Like there are studies showing obesity is contagious. So you spend time with obese people, you're more likely to become obese. All these things just spread out socially. And so what you're talking about, I don't know that we can reverse it just going like, hey guys, let's get strong. Who's interested, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, the only way to reverse it typically, if you look throughout history, is we have to be brought together by a major crisis to where the superficial problems that we've created, those become the minor problems because on Maslow's hierarchy, it's like, okay, these problems up here, now it's actual literal survival.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, that's the only way. And then still maybe there's a continue to climb up. Maybe that slows it, but I'm in total agreement with you. I mean, I love history. I mean, I've spent the past several years reading a lot of books on philosophy, psychology, and history, and you learn so much. And this is something I wish other people would spend more time learning about as well. Cause what happens is then you start to see what you're sharing you start to see the patterns, you know? And even what you're talking about with something like you spend time around certain people, you become like them, right? We become like who we surround ourselves with. There's some great laws around this. We've heard one called Dunbar's Law, and that's basically, you know, you have your inner circle of five that you become most like, but it's actually more than that. It's the 15 people and the 50 that you become like as well, to a degree, those people that you maybe invite to your wedding. And you become like those people. And so, and there's a study out of Duke University that found one of the top ways for you to get fit is just by hanging out with more disciplined people. You hang around with disciplined people, you will naturally become more disciplined and more fit and healthy yourself. And so that's, you know, been proven time and time again. So I totally agree with you.
And that conforms with another one of those things of like action precedes motivation, or you know, like do something and then the feeling of needing to do it will happen. You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
it's a math problem. Figure out what the steps are to the math problem and just start going. And then you'll find that like, it's not such a slog eventually.
So true. I mean, all of us have been in those workouts, right? I mean, these are the best workouts, right? You get started, you feel like crap, and you're 20, 30 minutes in. And then all of a sudden you're like, you get in your zone and you can just, you know, hammer it out then, and you feel great and you finish so strong and have one of your best workouts. So, you know, I know that, you know, but life is like that too. You know, when you, what I recently wrote a book, and then I was talking to a friend about this too, Donald Miller, and Donald, he's an amazing writer. He's written a book, Blue Light Jazz, years ago, another one, Story Brand. And he had told me how he changed. And he said, you know, I was always writing these great stories about characters. And he said, I realized that my life story, if somebody sat down and read it, it sucked. He said, I just didn't, it would not be a page turner. It wasn't like a Lord of the Rings or a, you know, or a Star Wars. It just wasn't a page turner. And he said, I realized what I needed to do is I needed to put myself into a good story. I needed to put myself in a difficult situation. And at the time, he had wrote a book called Blue Light Jazz. And about the year later, he just got fat and happy, I guess I'll say that. And he weighed about 380 pounds and was just miserable. And he said, I'm going to change my life by, I'm going to sign up to do a bike ride across the country from California all the way to New York, do all the way across the country. So he's like, I started training for it, lost some weight on the thing. And he lost, I mean, he lost, I think like almost like 180 pounds. I mean, a lot of weight. And pretty incredible, but he did this through, his thing was, okay, I'm going to put myself in a challenging story and or by signing up and taking responsibility for something, and that'll help me change. And so I think a lot of times for people, I saw a recent study that said 25% of people have an idea of what their purpose is. Like, they know what their purpose is. And purpose is very much tied to, like, I know what I want out of life. Like, I know where I'm aiming. And so if you think about this archery, that's where the term comes from with purpose. It's sort of like, okay, if you don't know what you're aiming at, I think for a lot of times people almost don't know what to do. Like, why would I get healthier? Why would I? So to me, that's another important, this is, you know, getting a little bit, it's on track, but off track to where, in terms of what we were talking about. But I think maybe that's part of the reason why some people maybe don't feel, maybe why they're not taking action or doing things. And there are, of course, levels of purpose. Like,
I actually think this is hugely important, massively important. So for me, I struggled with weight loss. And like the very first diet I did on my own, not as a kid, having a parent say, you're now on a diet and I'm going to regulate what you eat. But like, woke up one day as an adult, I'd gotten sober and I went, oh, there's another major thing in my life to tackle. I'm 550 pounds. This is not a desirable situation. What's my goal? What's my purpose? Lose weight. I proved I could do that by doing a liquid diet for 2 months. I lost 80 pounds. But then I gained weight back, right? Mm-hmm. So my purpose was always lose weight. I think you got to get way, way, way more specific, because we can say, we can have almost this mantra in our head of like an idea of what our purpose is, make somebody laugh. Okay, well, you can do that at a dinner table. You can do that, you know, as you play with your kid outside and not even realize that the purpose you've set, you're hitting. you're hitting your purpose, and it's not gratifying because it's not really thought through enough. I'm a big fan of what you're saying because I think we got to get really specific with this stuff. And my purpose changed radically when I did this. It went from lose weight to figure out a structure for my life that would produce an optimum situation, a desirable situation. So it no longer had anything to do really with losing weight. It was about who I was.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, I'll dive in and share a little bit more here because to me, like, this has been so impactful for my life. And we didn't get into this yet. I want to give you the quick version of this.
Please, but yeah.
So we haven't talked for 4 years, five, for a while. Well, about 2 years ago, I went in and was, I hurt myself lifting weights. It had gotten a lot better, but I still had this nagging issue. And I went in and got a natural procedure, injected my own cells. It's called stem cell and PRP. Got that done. But somehow when they went in, I got an infection in my disc.
Ooh.
And then it got into my bone and I got a spinal infection and I was told I might be permanently disabled. And I didn't walk for a year. Like this time last year, I didn't walk. So I didn't walk most of 2022 and part of 2023.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it was just crazy. And during that time of not walking, I had a friend come up and he said, "What am I doing?" And I just because I was in bed for a year, and I said, "I'm writing a book and I'm running my business and I'm spending time with my family and doing everything I can." He goes, "Gosh, if I were you, I'd just be eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew." And I said, "You know, I think for me, I'm just so keen on, like, I'm just really clear on my purpose. And so even though I'm in this situation, I'm still really inspired. I still really want to do everything I can with my life." And the way that I think about purpose, and I'm just going to mention a few things. These are a little bit more religious. And so I know some people would, you know, like hearing about that. Some people don't, but I'll be brief with it either way. But like the way that I always try and think about things, and this is true even with my business, with my marriage, with my life, is that I really, if you want to be successful, you want to start with the end in mind. Okay. Well, we can both set an end to our own lifetime. We can also set an end to, you know, our spiritual life, or no end, eternal. And so, you know, when I think about, when you read some of the great religious books, for me, it's been, you know, the Christian faith, it's been reading the Bible, or, you know, Judeo-Christian thought, you know, it starts off in the book of Genesis in a paradise. So you've got this Garden of Eden, this little garden, and God says, you know, subdue the earth and multiply. So, you know, like, take this little garden, and actually what he was actually saying was, make the entire earth a paradise. Like, some of it's rock, some of it's dirt, some of it's, but take the entire earth and make it like the Garden of Eden. And so, and then you hear two other commandments that Jesus says, but also other rabbis before him said, you know, claim this, is that the chief end of man, like, is to love people and love God. So just love people. It's adding value. And I think love looks different than most people think. I think love is, it's the thing that most people think, but it's also something additionally that I don't think a lot of people get. And love is, you're nourishing someone, you're encouraging them. It's the motherly love, but it's also the fatherly love of, hey, if you're not everything you should be right now, you're called to more. It's challenge. It's the coach, right? It's the Nick Saban. It's the, hey, get up off the ground, you know, rub some dirt on it and get it out there. But it's that combination of things of what love truly is. And it's self-sacrificing your own needs for the needs of others. But when I think about what purpose is globally for everybody, it's loving God, loving other people, and then turning this earth into a paradise for all of eternity. And as a dad, if I tie my purpose, because I think purpose, we tend to have different roles. And so our identity feeds our purpose. So my identity is as a son of God. My identity is as a dad, a husband, a business leader, you know, those sort of things. But if we were talking about being dads earlier, so, you know, my two daughters, so the lowest level of purpose for me as a dad would be, I impregnate a woman and I'm done.
Right.
No, I mean, but that's hey, you know, that's, you are a dad.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if you think in these base terms and you just set, what's my purpose going to be? A dad, you could wake up one day having kids spread around the world and go like, well, I fulfilled my purpose. And that's, I'm totally agree with you, because there have been instances in my life where I set this purpose and I set it as words, right? And it's, there's an idea attached to it, but it becomes fixed in words. And then I find myself in a situation where I'm like, this is exactly the words, but not what I pictured at all. I've manifested this situation in a way where I wasn't intentional enough, or there was something off. I really like what you're saying. Yeah, because that's true. You can be a dad by impregnating a girl. And it's like, was that the dad you intended to be? Like, you got to get more specific.
Yeah. And so, and the way that I'll just give two other rungs as an example of the way that I think about this. So then let's say you go a level up from that. And this is a big level up, by the way. But then you go a level up and you say, okay, my role as a dad is to provide for my family and to show up. That's pretty big, because even statistically today, if you look at the fatherlessness, and that actually happens less than 50% of the time. And even so that's a huge step up. I mean, you're providing financially, you're enjoying time with your family, and then I think there are other levels above that, though. I think, like, for me, the way that I try and think about being a dad is I believe that I'm an eternal spiritual being. I'm called to help my two daughters. Not only them grow, but their generations and generations and their kids and their kids and their kids. And there's two things in particular I'm very conscious of, and maybe it's even three that I'll say that I want them to grow with. Number one is, I'm going to mention three. One is, life is about relationship. And so I want them to understand and grow in understand what it means to have deep and meaningful relationships with God and other people, the family, but everyone around them. And then I want them, and then the other two things are, as a dad, I want to help them grow in character. You know, like, I think about this, like, would I be more proud if my daughter, got a full ride scholarship, or if she was just an incredibly generous, kind, virtuous person, right? I mean, it's like, so that's it. It's like, okay, I want my daughters to be incredibly courageous, generous lovers. And then also I want them to maximize your life. You got to take your character to the highest level possible. And you also have to take your unique gifting to the highest level possible. So if you're gifted as an artist or an athlete or an entrepreneur or whatever it is, you know, maybe it's communication, maybe it's, you know, customer service, writing, whatever it is, but take your gift, take it to the highest level possible. Think about someone like Michelangelo. It's like, he had this gifting of artistry and he took it to the highest level possible, maybe of anyone of all time, or at least incredibly high. So with my daughters, I'm going to be looking out for, what are they good at? What are their giftings? And then helping them grow in that to serve the world, contribute to the world, make it a better place. And so I think when you're, as a dad, if that's your mentality, I'm raising up a world-changing daughter who's going to help grow in character and grow in her unique skill. Those are some things I think that, you know, can help tap into your purpose too.
Yeah, no, those are amazing. It's very inspiring. And I do think that we do wind up sitting around thinking about ourselves far too much and getting hung up in these problems that we then want the quickest, most direct, you know, tweet version option out, right? Like 144 characters, Twitter version one. They didn't even expand it to 200 characters. And it's like, if I can wrap up this problem in a tweet, good, and I move on. I never have to think about it again because I've got my answer for that. And I do think there's kind of like a numbed malaise to life in that paradigm, you know? And I think getting really specific and thinking about these higher callings, and like, I go all over the place with religion and spirituality. And, you know, my understanding of God came through reading Maimonides. And like his descriptions.
I love Maimonides.
It's amazing. The book, A Guide for the Perplexed, really, really gave me a feeling of understanding God. And then I think about science and the laws of thermodynamics. And it's like, you cannot create or destroy energy. Something is animating us, right? Yeah. Like there is an energy in us. There's a difference between living meat and a dead sack of flesh. And that's energy. So that cannot be created or destroyed. That means it's eternal. That means it's going on forever. So we can attach all of our own narratives and stories and whatever that means for us. There is something eternal happening in you right now. And in me, scientifically, like, nobody can argue with that.
Yeah.
And so, like, let's have that mean something. Let's have that be big. And you know, and then we get into guys like Sapolsky, who's like, there's no free will and it all means nothing and it's mud to mud. And that's all
the nihilists just trying to.
And it's like, and I can even get into nihilism just to have nihilism be like finding joy. If it's joy that you're looking for, if that gives you some reason to exist and you want to erase any more fundamental meaning than that or absurdism. And I'm like, just make it fun and loving, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And we'll have a good time. And we'll do stuff that makes people feel good, you know, and makes people uplifted, because there's a difference between having a conversation like this where we're trying to crush and oppress people versus trying to show people that like there's more to it and it can be good and you can feel relief, you know?
Yes.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Growing up as a kid, my mom would never let us have real cereal. When I say real cereal, I mean the stuff that you'd find at a normal grocery store. My mom would get us the cardboard shavings at the health food store, and I was always miserable with my cereal. And then I would magically go to my friend's house, and they would have real cereal. And I would be so envious, and I would sit and eat bowl after bowl of delicious frosted goodness, sugary, wonderful stuff. And then I grew up and I was able to buy my own cereal, but that lasted all of 2 minutes because then I started dieting. So cereal left my life entirely. Well, not anymore. Not anymore. Now there's Magic Spoon, which is high protein cereal. My favorite flavor is their peanut butter. It's incredible. Variety pack. Four flavors are cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. This pack has 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Only 140 calories a serving. It's high protein, has 0 grams of sugar, keto friendly, gluten free, grain free, and soy free. It's incredible. Go to magicspoon.com/glutton and grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code GLUTTON at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, start your day off right with a delicious bowl of high-protein cereal at magicspoon.com/glutton and use the code GLUTTON to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah, you know, I think, you know, in studying history, you've read this before, I know, and probably talked about it on the show, but, you know, John D. Rockefeller said, you know, I don't want a nation of thinkers, I want a nation of workers. Right. And part of it too, I even think about our school systems, the way that they're set up today. I mean, that's something I went to a public high school. We didn't have like anything checking for guns, like none of that. Like this was like, you know, Troy, Ohio, where I grew up and just north of Dayton. And we didn't have any of that. It's a little bit of a different world today, but I think as well that, you know, there's this quote that I love and it's by Confucius, I think. And he said, if you want to, gosh, I'm going to mess this up now. I knew it up until this second, but it's something like, if you want to make a difference for a year, plant wheat. If you want to make a difference for 10 years, plant trees. If you want to, you know, change the world, educate children,
right?
You know? And yeah. So it just made me think about this earlier, because we were talking about this earlier, like what's going wrong in society today. And I actually believe a big part of it was, I think it's in 19, 62 or 52, we pulled any religion out of schools and any morality there. And I think that was a problem too. But I don't think it's just that. I just think it's like what we're reading. It's like people have started to discredit history, discredit, again, even the people. What these people were not very religious, Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle and others. And so I think we really missed out on that. And by the way, this is always one of the things I appreciate about you is you're such a deep thinker and so philosophical in your thoughts, because I think this is sometimes how you get to the root of, you know, root a lot of these issues. But yeah, I've really over, you know, the past year or so as well, I mentioned I had this spinal infection. When I was in that situation, by the way, it was kind of crazy. There were emotions I'd never experienced before that I experienced for the first time. Yeah. Cause I'm very positive, but I had felt despair and hopelessness. Because like the exact conversation with the doctor was, I had to be flown in because I had a MRI. They said, you have an infection. I was in Puerto Rico. I got flown to Florida, to Sarasota. And they said, and he said, hey, your prognosis is this. Best case scenario, here are his exact words. You'll be the first to notice when there's bad weather and you'll have pain the rest of your life. And the second is you're going to be permanently disabled. And so for 24 hours, and by the way, I'm a doctor too. Like I know this is bedside manner on his part anyways, but I really went down a rabbit hole of how bad, if you have a spinal infection, how bad that can be. But then I realized this isn't serving me. And that's the thing a lot of people have to realize. I realized, you know what? I need to be thinking, those people that were told they'd never walk again, but did.
Yeah.
What did they think? How did they move forward? That's how to live the best life possible. And so I had to say, I'm going to think the thing that's going to serve me best. And I think a lot of people need to do that. Think about, okay, is the way that I think and live now, is this going to serve me best? Is this going to lead to the best life possible? And doing our best then to become aware of what will lead us to the best life possible and start living that out anyways.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a powerful thing too, what you're talking about. And I experience it in a way where it's like, I know that I am not my thoughts. My thoughts are separate from me because I'm listening to my thoughts, right? Whatever I am is actually hearing these thoughts and allowing it to dictate my life. And when I go like, that's not real, that despair, that's not real. And I try to like track where it's coming from and take it apart as best I can intellectually. Quite often I can prove to myself, oh, it's not real. It's total BS. I got up today. I got on the scale. I wasn't happy with what the scale told me. I looked in the mirror. I wasn't happy with what I saw. Nothing objectively changed. Like I can tell you, like my pound up today is because I had a high sodium dinner last night. There I did, and even if I gained a pound of fat, it's not the end of the world, right? Yeah, but I didn't do that overnight. But whatever, even if I did, I look in the mirror and whatever lens I'm looking through that is allowing me to see something disappointing, it's just not real. And so I can either choose to have my day based on that, or I can work my butt off while I'm standing in the mirror and not leave the mirror until I find something about myself, even if it's something the way I treated somebody yesterday that I can be proud of. You know, if I held open a door for somebody or helped an old lady with her grocery bags to her car, if I did something that makes me feel good, then I can lead my day that way. But my point is, like, it doesn't always work that spotting that stuff and understanding the truth or the untruth in how my mind is trying to sabotage me or my mind is trying to benefit me doesn't always take it away immediately. You know, like I can recognize that I have road rage sometimes, not where I'm going to run my car into somebody, but like I've yelled, I've cursed at people with my kids in my car. And then I feel guilty. I'm like, that reaction served no one. The guy didn't hear me. Yeah. All I've done is scare my kids and I'm now upset and it's useless. So I'm going to not do that. And then the next time a guy cuts me off, I find myself getting angry again, but I don't curse. Right. Yeah. But I'm still angry and I'm denying that anything he did should have. He didn't hit me. Nobody's hurt. Everybody's fine. I didn't have to slam on my brakes. I've just gotten angry. I'm still angry, though. I know. So it's just not it's not immediate, but I know that over time I could get to the point where I'm like, I'm now going like, that guy's in more of a hurry than I am. Okay.
This is so powerful. One of the things that I've studied recently, and again, one of the things I'd mentioned, I wrote this book. It's called Think This, Not That. And in the book, I get into awareness, because when I look at people that are at the top level of spiritual health and the top people of physical health or the top people of intelligence, really emotional intelligence, they have a high level of awareness. Like, if anybody has spent much time in religious circles around, whether it's a rabbi or a priest or a pastor or any, you know, you'll notice that most of them, they're very calm and collected, yeah. Right? There's this sort of like energy.
Hard to really ruffle their feathers.
Yes. And that's spiritual awareness is what it is. They're very aware of themselves. They're aware of others. And they have this awareness. And that's something, you look at all of the great, typically we'd call them mystics, these people, everyone from Jesus to St. Francis of Assisi to Maimonides to many others, Mother Teresa. I mean, they had this sort of like Gandhi, this calm power to them. And if people want to grow in their spiritual life, well, you need to develop that. But it's what you're saying. It's, I'm aware. I'm very self-aware. And in health, this is important. Like, if somebody wants to grow in their health today, there's a lot of these biomarkers, which I think are good. You can get blood tests. I like those insulin, the continuous blood glucose monitors. And I got an Aura ring that tracks my sleep. Like, all this stuff is good. But what's even better is just being aware of your body and what works and what doesn't work. And I had the sodium the night before a little bit, so that's not a big deal. You know, like, that awareness is absolutely huge. And there's a study I go over in the book, and I love the title of it. It's called The Batman Study.
Oh, wow.
So what they did is they took these kids and they had three groups. And so they had these kids, they said, hey, we want you to go and work on this project, like build this house, do this thing, work on this project. And they had one group go in and say, hey, John and Lisa, go in there and work on this project. Okay. And they did it for a certain amount of time, and then they decided to play afterwards. And then they had another group and they said, we want you to self-distance. So it's what you're saying. It's where, hey, John, look at yourself like you're stepping outside of yourself and thinking, and we want you to work as hard as you can. Okay. The first group, we said, work as hard as you can. The second group. And those kids did, I want to say, like 13% better. So they had a much better production, were more successful. And then they had the last group. They said, rather than saying be yourself in that way or be aware of yourself, they said, hey, who's your favorite superhero or princess? And so it was like, you know, Dora the Explorer or Princess Jasmine or Batman. Okay. And those kids were even more successful. What's so interesting about the study is it's really just a study about identity. It's like you had these kids who were operating as themselves or aware of themselves or believing they were someone even more powerful than they thought they were, like Batman.
That's the key. If you can create that persona that's even greater than you perceive yourself to be, that's more able, that's more capable, that's more noble or virtuous. And that's what you constantly are working towards. That's the kind of suit of armor you put on every day. You go, I'm going to be Batman today. That's brilliant, dude.
Yeah. And the idea there too, there was another, there's some other studies I think are really complementary to it. And they're called the future self study. And so really believing and saying, okay, what is my ideal future self? Like, for instance, hey, I got mad at my spouse or I yelled at my kid or something happened. And then say, you know what? I want to operate like future Josh. Okay. So future Josh, let me think about myself in 5 years, you know, more humble, more gracious, more kind, more self-aware. Okay. And then try and be that person now. Now, for some people, that's a little difficult. And so another thing you can do is think about, well, who's the most virtuous person I know? By the way, this actually ties into virtue ethics, which tends to be the most actually successful way of being actually growing your character. But it's saying, okay, how would, like, I'm thinking about a friend of mine, Pastor Craig Rochelle, how would Craig act like as a dad in that situation? Okay, well, he walks calmly, he puts his arm around, he gets down on his knees, he looks his kids in the eye, he says, okay, so next time that happens, I'm thinking ahead, I'm going to act like that now. And do that. So anyways, and we've kind of gotten away from this in society in terms of modeling other people. It's like everybody should be canceled and you should just be who you are inside, which we do want to be authentic, of course. But my point is, I think there used to be a greater level of sort of apprenticeship, mentorship, discipleship. That's how most people learned. But for myself, I think one of the things that's helped me grow the most in my life is being very intentional about saying, I'm going to model this person and their character in that situation of what's the best way I could possibly act. It's kind of like being like Batman, only, hey, if there's a crying baby on an airplane, what would Mother Teresa do? How would she act? Like, how would she feel? So I'm going to try and channel and be aware of that and foster that same mindset.
Yeah, there really is something heavy duty, I think, to opening yourself up to everyone, every point of view, every behavior, and looking at it and going, that's a being there. That's a person. And, you know, look, I think for me, it breaks down if somebody's like breaking into my house and trying to harm one of my kids. It's very hard for me to think of how I could love that person. But outside of that, when we're talking about society and we're just moving through life, I don't want to categorize people and say those are people that I like and those are people that I don't like. I just want to have this feeling of like, how can I be the best that I can be? And the best that I can be is kind of being accepting to as many people as I can. That's part of being the best version of myself as possible. Because I find myself being judgmental often, and that doesn't make me feel good either. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of why I'm building resentment and negativity. And it's like, that's not servicing me in a positive way. I want to be better today than I was yesterday. And part of that is going like, I'm gonna allow that person to have their ideas, and maybe I'm gonna even become interested in them and see how they're servicing them, how that idea is benefiting that person, which could be completely foreign to me. But again, it's difficult because I quite often will have a reaction, and then I'll have to be interested in my reaction. Why am I reacting that way? What's happening with me? Because I want to present just openness and like let's all, you know. God forbid we have to have another 9/11. That was kind of the last time I think we as a country, at least, right, let alone world, like, you know, what do we have to have? Agreed. Aliens come and attack us so that the world can get together and do something? But right now, our country seems so fractured. And it's like, you know, mostly I'm on here talking about weight loss and trying to help people figure out weight loss, which I think is a great thing to do. I think there's a lot of people that want to lose weight. And I think, like, to your point, one of the biggest hurdles is that we get in our own way with how we think. Yes. That's it. You know, we're either moving through life thoughtlessly. And I completely understand, you know, that people say like being obese is a choice. I totally disagree. I think there is a structure built up that supports most of the country that allows complete thoughtlessness. And then we're moving less, we're eating more, calories are being subsidized by the government, and we're having lots of really delicious, not nutritious food. And we're seeing an expanding populace. This is not a choice. This is just people moving through life. Fine. If you want to start thinking and making choices, you can get out of it. That's kind of the point. The choice comes when you want to step onto a different road. And I do think, like, I'm excited to read your book because I do think it fundamentally is how we're thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to your point, I do think the more that we can think correctly, the better our lives are going to be. Like, for me, I feel like I think rightly about food now, right? I think about, it's my medicine. It helps me achieve my greatest life. I do enjoy it too, though. Like we have a lot of fun. Like, we'll make homemade pizza night. My wife's into sourdough now, or we'll do, you know, these thin crusts made of, you know, something healthy, all kinds of different stuff. Sometimes it's cauliflower, sometimes it's, you know, rice, or who knows. But we, I think when we think rightly, it's big, you know. And I would say, when I was going through this health issue, as my mom, she beat cancer naturally, and as I worked with patients, one of the things that I realized over time was food is medicine, it's powerful, but mindset medicine is even more powerful. because there are a lot of people and patients I cared for in the past who they knew the right thing to do. They just didn't do it. Right. And so, you know, and by the way, I absolutely agree. Like, we have set up a system to create people that don't think. I mentioned the school systems. I mentioned the government. Just get like, it's just, so there's no doubt the system isn't ideal. And there's no doubt, but all of us do have the freedom and ability, even though some of the choices are harder, to be able to change their life like you did, as I've done. And I'll tell everybody just a quick story here, just as an example of like a mindset thing and why, how literally, I really believe for a lot of people, if they just have one mind shift in one area of life, I mean, it could radically change their life in ways that they didn't even think possible. Like when I was in high school, I was a terrible student. And when I was a freshman, freshman English, I had a teacher ask me to stay after class. And she said, Josh, stay after class. I said, okay. And she said, what do you want to do after high school? And I said, I really would love to be a doctor. And she laughed out loud. And she said, listen, you'll never be a doctor with your grades. My daughter has a 3.08 GPA and barely got into med school at Ohio State. And I said that, by the way, before, because my mom had breast cancer, went through conventional treatments, lost her hair. And I just, as a kid, I thought, I want to help people like my mom.
Yeah.
But then the teacher said that, and she said, listen, you got an F on this paper. You're getting a D minus in this class. She said, you need to try harder. And that was it. But I walked out of there as a 14-year-old kid thinking, I'm not smart. And right. Then 2 weeks later, I go to it. My mom brings me to a physician. I get diagnosed with ADHD. They're talking about me, like the doctor, like I'm not in the room. And then I think, oh, I've got like a medical condition. Like, again, I'm 14. Like, okay, I'm like medically not smart. So in high school, I just stopped trying. The only reason I graduated at all, I graduated with a C- GPA, barely graduated, was because I knew my dad would just be irate if I didn't graduate, you know?
Yeah.
And so I ended up graduating. I ended up applying to colleges, didn't get in anywhere except for one school sent me a letter, and they said, it was University of Kentucky. And they said, you're not admitted, but if you come and take summer school and average above a 3.0, we'll let you in. And so I thought, why don't we be the kid that stays back and goes to community college or doesn't go to college at all? So I went and I said, okay, I'm going to really try here. And the first class I had was English 101. And the first big assignment I had was a paper, and her name was Miss Williams. And I went and I turned in my paper. And a few days later, she says, Josh, would you stay after class? And I literally thought,
I'm done.
No. Right. Yeah. Deja vu. This is all over again. And she said, what's your major? And I said, well, I haven't chosen a major yet. She said, well, I want to let you know that I think you should consider being an English major or journalism major. She said, you got the highest grade in the class. You got an A. I think you could be a really talented writer. Great job. And I walked out of there. And for me, I would call it like I had a memory transplant or a mindset transplant, because I went for 4 years and I just thought, I'm not smart. Yeah. I'm not even going to try. And I really felt like I was dumb. And then after that, I had one teacher tell me, you're good at this. And then I averaged above a 3.0. I later went to Johns Hopkins University, averaged a 3.9 there, again, became a doctor and wrote books. And I don't say any of that to boast. I just say it because like I was this kid who was bullied in high school too, and also didn't feel like I was smart in a number of things, and then went on and was able to do this. But if I wouldn't have had that change in mindset, none of that would have happened.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people today, like I saw this with patients, doctors would tell them, you have to be on this pill the rest of your life, or you got to live with this condition, and so they just never even tried to change, right? And so most people have, I call these limiting beliefs. We have these in our relationships. We have these about our health. We have them about ourselves. We have them about others, you know, or about the world, like, oh, the world's against me or stacked against me. And so if we can just change one of those beliefs, it can radically change our life. And so, you know, I wrote the book, Think This, Not That. And I really get into in the book, a lot of the stuff we talked today, I get into, here's exactly how to break through these limiting beliefs. Here's how to find your identity, find your purpose, live your best life.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And
I'm excited because yeah. I think that's really important that we know we can do that for ourselves. We yeah. can be that teacher, angel. Thank God she did yes. that. But
yes.
not everybody gets that. That's like a lottery True. Ticket moment. You know what I mean? And not everybody gets yes. that. And we have to know that we have it within ourselves to do that. We can create that epiphany for ourselves. I think it's a very important book you've written.
Well, I totally agree. And by the way, after that moment, one person helped me do it. Then I realized I could do it myself.
Yeah.
So I started going through and thinking about where else am I limiting myself?
Right, exactly.
And started working on those things. So it really helped me experience a breakthrough. And you know, and I'll just say here, just a little plug. If people want to check out the book, it's in bookstores nationwide. It's on Amazon.com. And if people go to joshax.com, my name, I created a mindset masterclass and a workbook that people get for free if they get the book. Actually, hundreds of dollars worth of free stuff if they want to get the book, joshax.com. But man, I'm so grateful you had me on. Like,
Thank you for coming.
I love what you do. Like, one of the things I love about your show is that you go deep. You know, sometimes, you know, people kind of stick at surface level, but you're always going sort of deeper in how we can truly transform. Because again, food is medicine is true. Exercise is medicine is true. And we should be doing all those things. But really, right thinking and the mindset, it's so important for us healing and living our best life. So I always appreciate these conversations.
Yeah, I think it's fundamental. I think action precedes motivation. But I think
yes.
thought precedes action. So you got to have the thought, I should take action. Then you have action.
Yeah.
Then you get the kind of benefits of like, okay, that worked. I feel better. I'm going to keep doing it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally agree. Amazing.
Thank you so much, Dr. X. I'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ethan.
And now for the Q&A.
Here's a question from Ed.
Hi, Ed.
Ed says, hey, Ethan, I'm a huge fan. Love your work in TV, films, and with the podcast. And I've been inspired by your weight loss journey and success to the point I finally pursued this for myself last year. He says, I decided to start small and just adjust my diet with a calorie deficit to lose 2 pounds per week, sticking to fruit, veggies, whole grains, and lean meat. Between September 23 and the end of January 24, I dropped 50 pounds strictly through diet.
Fuck yeah, dude. That's awesome.
So well done. He says, beginning in February, I began with weight training along with some cardio, alternating days between. I've been using a calorie counting app, so I'm tracking everything I'm eating along with the number of steps I take, etc. As of now, I've noticed that my weight loss has essentially stalled, and it's freaking me out a bit. I'm still
When did he start lifting weights?
February. So, okay. You know, it's February 28th right now that we're reading this. So, right. He says, I'm still morbidly obese and my physical activity is significantly higher than it used to be, but I'm just scared that I dieted too long without a maintenance phase and slowed down my metabolism. I figured it wasn't needed right away since I'm morbidly obese and don't feel like I'm starving for food. When I began this weight loss journey, I weighed 402. My current weight is 351, and I really want to get down to 300 pounds before going on a long-term maintenance phase, 6+ months. Should I continue what I'm doing?
He really wants to get to where?
300. before he does a long-term maintenance. So he basically wants to lose 50 more. He says, should I continue doing what I'm doing or just take a maintenance break? Do you think my body is essentially thinking that I'm starving it and I should add in a couple hundred calories to mitigate that? Do you have any advice for myself or others in a similar situation? Thank you for all you do.
Yeah. Thank you. He lost more than 10% of his body weight. I mean, look, and I don't want you to have to read the whole thing again, but it doesn't, has he reduced his calories at all from the beginning to now?
He did not mention that.
Right. So one thing to keep in mind is that at 400 pounds, the amount of calories to maintain your weight is going to be different than 350 pounds, especially if you diet to 350 pounds. So if you took a 350 pound individual and put him next to, and everything, all things were equal, except one guy dieted to 350 pounds and the other guy just is 350 pounds, the maintenance calories for the guy who's just naturally 350 pounds is going to be higher than the guy who dieted down. Because as we're dieting down, we are slowing down our metabolic process. It does slow down a bit. I mean, so, you know, after 50 pounds, you would have to lessen your calories a bit in order to continue to produce weight loss. The problem with trying to do this in a one-shot deal, or even 100 pounds, is the hormones, your body's going to start fighting it more and more, weight loss. It's going to become harder and harder. You're going to get hungrier. You're going to, your leptin and ghrelin are going to be out of whack. And so, like, my real advice would be to do a, it doesn't have to be 6 months. You could do 3 months of maintenance and then go back into it. Into dieting. That would be my recommendation. But fuck, man, 50 pounds is great. Congratulate yourself. You got a lot more work to do. I'm glad you're not trying to do it so fast. And the further along you get, 2 pounds a week is going to at some point become unrealistic. You're going to want to slow that down too and see a pound a week. But also, if you haven't worked out in a while, or ever, he doesn't sound like he had ever worked out, there is this magical thing that can happen to first-time lifters, which is you can be in a caloric deficit and building muscle at the same time. It's not everybody can do this, but it seems that the science indicates that the magic formula is for people who have never really exercised or done resistance training before. You put them in a diet, you put them in a caloric deficit, you get them lifting weights, they start building muscle. So my only point in saying that is, yeah, you probably are still burning fat, but you're also building muscle, so it's masked on the scale. That's something to take into consideration. The other thing to take into consideration is I know when I get deep into a diet, I start craving salt more. I also know when I start exercising or when I'm exercising a lot, I crave salt more because I'm sweating more. And salt can make us retain water, which can also mask fat loss. So you could be totally losing fat and it's just not showing up on the scale. Mm-hmm. Are your pants getting, this is when you would maybe want to try another, utilize another metric for fat loss, gauging fat loss, which would be like, you know, measuring yourself. So my suggestion is either take a break from the scale, believe in the process, don't change anything, start measuring yourself and let that be the guide, or do a maintenance period and then come back to the diet. But like, fuck, man, kudos to you. You sound like you're doing awesome. Do not let that discourage you. It could be a number of things. You could be packing on muscle and burning fat, and so you don't see the loss on the scale. You could be consuming more salt because you're exercising. and retaining a little bit of water, you're still burning fat and you're not seeing a reduction on the scale. Or you could just really need a maintenance period. It doesn't have to be 6 months long. That's my advice. Keep doing the resistance training. That's great.
Awesome. Love it. Well, Ed, let us know what you decide and how it goes. You can email us like anyone else out there with a question. It's hello@americanglutton.net.
Thanks for listening to this episode of American Glutton. I'm Ethan Suplee. You can follow us on Instagram @AmericanGluttonPodcast. Sincerely.